What I was going to ask, the difference between resignation and surrender when faced with difficult times or illness.
Right.
So that's the question.
Okay. So, resignation is it's kind of like it's a declaration that, you know, the situation is fucked and it's always going to be. And it's the end product of relentless desire to control things and get them your way, which doesn't work out. So at a certain point, you just get resigned. And that means, like I say, it's a declaration that says, you know, something's very wrong with the world or other people or the situation, all of the above. And that's the way it's going to be, and so it's like that. And, so to repeat, it's the end result of a desire for control. It gets frustrated, and person like says, "I give up," but they don't really give up. They don't give up their attitude about it, which is like, if I can't get my way, then something is wrong. Now, surrender, at least in this kind of context, is pretty much the same thing as what we call acceptance. And what it means is, well, acceptance is a word that is pretty hard to define, but everybody knows what it means. It means like, that's simply the way it is. There's no pushback about it. There's no declaration that the way it is wrong. There it is. Like, can you accept that there are three logs on the hearth right now? Around the hearth on the stones. Yeah, I accept that that's true. And from that place, it, you know, arises some questions like, well, what do I do with that? But resignation would be more like, yeah, you know, I've been trying to get six logs on the fucking fireplace, and it just isn't happening, and nobody's paying attention to me, so I'll screw the whole thing. Very stuck position. And there's a kind of frustration and anger to it. Again, a declaration that I couldn't get my way, and therefore something's wrong. And I'm mad about it, but it's been useless for me to do anything about it, so I'm resigned to be miserable for the rest of my life. Seriously.
Kind of like marriage.
No.
Not helpful.
Where's the snowball?
But in surrender or in acceptance, you know, you give up your declaration about it. And you start from a place, well, there it is. And then, like I say, other questions arise, like, so what do I do with this? What's this showing me? How do I move with it? How do I relate to it? Is there something to learn here? All kinds of really good questions.
Whose fault is it?
So in surrender or acceptance, there's a lot of room to move and to discover things, to learn things, to find let's call it a effective way of relating to whatever it is that's there. It doesn't necessarily mean acceptance or surrender doesn't mean that you like it, or that you want more of it, or you want it to last longer, or something like that. Like pain, for example, you can say that on the one hand, there's a possibility of like fighting it. Like, I don't want to feel this, so I got to do something to not feel like I'm feeling. And in the long run, that kind of attitude produces actions which produce more imbalance. And if that goes on long enough, the person can easily become resigned. So, let's say the person has a lot of pain, they don't want to feel pain, so they decide the thing to do is get rid of it by taking opiates. That seems to work out for a while, but then they get constipated, but beyond that they get addicted to the opiates, and their life starts taking a lot of turns for the worse. On the other hand, in the face of pain, if you surrender to it or simply accept how you're feeling, that opens up the possibility, or let's say the inevitability in most cases, that it's going to move on. Because otherwise, if you fight it, it fights back. Like that old saying, what you resist, persists. So resignation is like the end product of resistance that has not worked out to your satisfaction. But surrender is something quite different. Let's call it from a, if you'll pardon the expression, a spiritual perspective. You can say that surrender or acceptance says, okay, there it is. I'm not interested in denying or dissociating or distracting myself from that presence. There it is. And it assumes that if something is there, it has to be a spiritual or a divine expression. And then you say, well, what is this showing me? But the main thing, by far, that's important about this distinction, the main thing that we get into resignation about, that we lack resistance about, is feeling certain emotions. We don't want to feel them. The big ones in this category are fear, anger, and grief. But even the other ones can sometimes be resisted, like sympathy and even happiness. But that resistance, that lack of surrender, the simple presence which is there, creates further problems. Because the emotions, naturally, when we're in a good balanced relationship with them, they arise, you could say, in response to a certain situation to help us move through it. So anger arises to give us what we need to set a boundary or restore a boundary that's been violated. Fear arises to help us either escape from or overcome present danger. And grief arises to cleanse us of a loss that we suffered, so that instead of being stuck there, we can resolve it and open ourselves to what life is bringing next. But in the face of resistance in the emotions, they get dammed up and over-amplified, out of proportion. And they don't get a chance to do their natural beneficial function. So you can say there's a big benefit in surrendering or accepting whatever you're feeling. In that way, you don't have to see emotions as something to overcome or some sort of something to be problematical or something that needs to be controlled. Same thing is true with illness, any kind of illness. You know, the society likes to say, well, you've got to fight it. You know, you've got to be a fighter and overcome it and stuff like that. But that's just nothing more than another way of saying you should resist it. And the end result is either resignation or it's another twist on the same thing. It's like a unnatural buildup behind the dam of that emotion. Which, so like anger, for example, you know, it's quite natural, for example, if a person has a particular illness that produces a, kind of impinges on their normal boundaries and makes it, for example, difficult or impossible to do things that they would normally do and would wish to do and stuff like that, it's quite natural at some time to feel some frustration or anger about it. But again, it's always about allowing those emotions to move and to flow and to do what they're there to do. So with grief, you know, when you have a loss, grief arises not as a problem, but as a healer. If it's treated as a problem, it gets dammed up and can't do its blessed job. Cleaning us out of the pain of the loss and opening us up to the next thing. And with fear, you know, like I say, fear is also a natural and beneficial emotional energy when it's in balance. It's really in charge of maintaining our integrity as living human beings. Even, you know, small day-to-day concerns, like concern that you get enough to eat today. You could say it's a very mild and beneficial form of fear. Natural and beneficial. But if we resist feeling fear, we become afraid of feeling fear. Then one of the things that happens is that the fear gets dammed up and over-amplified, and it begins to extend to all the other emotions. Because out of fear, as we were saying the other night, we try and control everything to avoid the possibility of some kind of danger or loss or something. So from that perspective of that fear, it begins to fear the experience of any emotion because emotions defy that sort of control ability and predictability. So let's not go there because something terrible may happen. So sometimes you see people, sometimes you can identify this in yourself. They suffered a big loss, and they tell themselves they got to be strong. They can't give in to feeling grief because if they did, they would fall apart or something. And the truth is that there would be great benefit to them. Or when we deny ourselves the natural expression of anger, because, well, what will people think of me, and this will create more problems, and if I'm angry, I'm a bad person, and all these other things. So you end up not in a natural and fluid way defending your legitimate boundaries. And you end up getting more and more angry at the person who seems to be imperiling those boundaries, and or you get very angry at yourself for allowing that. It begins to eat at you. The surrender, in the way we're speaking about now, is very simple. It's simply opening yourself to a presence that's there. Saying, okay, there it is, so there it is, and it's got to be legitimate, and so what is that about? And how do I move with it? What can I learn from it? All those things. Who's to blame? As you said. I was just kidding on that one, of course. So does that help?
Yeah. We just got into a debate on semantics, I think. Surrender sounds to me like resignation. My classical definition of surrender is resignation, whereas acceptance was the word I would like to use for what you're talking about.
Thank you for
expanding, on my understanding of that, but
yeah,
I get it. It's just surrender is like the army gives up and gives all their power and their weapons up and surrender and get taken over, which to me sounds like resignation.
Well,
so it's just, I think it just, we got caught up in a semantics discussion, and acceptance makes a lot more sense as a word.
If it works for you, then use that word.
Yeah, but certainly, I understand what you're saying, and yes, I know.
But there is something in that analogy that you use, which is about giving up the fight. There is an aspect of that in acceptance. It's like, I'm not fighting it, I'm not trying to overcome it, I'm not trying to get away from it, I'm not, giving up the fight. And when you give up the fight, all kinds of other possibilities show up.
Like control, like giving up control allows grace.
Yes, because control, again, is a fight with reality. And things are working out this way, and I'm at war with that. I want it to work out my way.
Can you directly apply that to serious life-threatening illness a little bit?
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to give you an example that from my life recently. So, a brother-in-law of mine was diagnosed several years ago with a very slow-moving, rather benign, non-threatening form of leukemia. And basically, he was told by his doctors that it's not really something to be concerned about. He'll probably die of something else, and kind of like no big deal with this particular form of leukemia, which is a, if I remember, it's a cancer of the bone marrow. Is that right?
The white cells.
Yeah. So, anyway, recently, in the last few months, apparently, according to his test results, this was sort of flaring up. And the doctors were very concerned, and they said, what you've got to do is take chemotherapy, because otherwise this could get out of hand, etc. Now, chemotherapy is quite literally a weapon of war. It's a poison as administered with the hope that it's going to kill off the bad cells before it kills off the patient. Now, I'm just saying this. I'm not saying that no one should ever take it. I'm saying, it is a weapon of death. It's designed to kill things in the body. And so, anyway, even though he was a very kind of holistically minded guy, he said, yeah, okay, let's go for it. So it was given to him, and they said, well, don't worry, this is a very, very mild form of chemotherapy, and it has minimal to no side effects, and da-da-da-da, and this is the thing to do. So he went for it. Well, as part of the effect of the chemotherapy, which is, again, it's a poison, and as is well known, it has a devastating effect on the immune system. And so it lowered his immune system, and he got a very bad case of pneumonia and died from it. So, you know, no one knows. I certainly don't know what would happen had he taken some other course of action. And I'm not saying this, again, I want to emphasize, to say that no one should ever take it. But it is a... it's a way of trying to fight the disease. And that doesn't necessarily produce, a healthy and balanced body, mind, spirit. It is not at war with itself or the world and so forth. So it's a drastic thing. It's sometimes useful, it's sometimes the right thing to do. But you asked for an example in the case of the serious illness.
So in that example, he chose to do the chemo as a form of resignation.
Well,
trying to get it back to a resignation.
Well, I don't know if it was resignation, but it was certainly it was a we're talking about warfare, right?
Yeah.
Remember? So
I'm trying to control it. Yeah. Accepting
well, trying to kill it. Trying to kill the disease. Okay? And in that battle, he lost his own life. Okay? Now, again, what would have happened under other circumstances? Complete speculation. And, so I don't know. But, and he might have died anyway, had he gone a different route with it. But what I'm pointing to is this thing about being at war with reality. No matter what the outcome, when we're at war with what is, well, we're suffering. We're in a big struggle. And therefore, the tendency is that we're in that kind of warfare. We're not really living a life of peace and dying a peaceful death when that time comes. So again, I wasn't around. I don't know how it was for my brother-in-law. But for whatever reason, this example that popped up is very recent for me.
Right. So, you know, serious illness, acceptance doesn't mean that you're not going to have suffering, but it's suffering that may be physical.
I think that when you accept, when you have a serious illness, I think acceptance is, I think you actually don't suffer, but I think you might still feel the pain, but you actually don't suffer. I think pain and suffering are completely different. So I think you might feel pain, but you don't suffer anymore. I don't know if that makes
yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. Exactly. There is a difference between pain and suffering. So pain is a natural part of life. You know, everything that's alive is going to have some pain. And it comes and it goes. And that's just all there is to it. You know, like a deer is going to, I don't know what, bump its knee or whatever and feel some pain or whatever. But suffering is different. Something is particularly a human phenomenon, and it has to do with the mind making a declaration about the pain, what it means. the simplest declaration is it means that this is bad, or that something's wrong, or that the doctor did this or that, or I didn't fail to do this, or it means I'm this, or that person's that, or the situation, or whatever. And when that is added on to the pain, that's what's called suffering. So I agree completely with what you just said. And they say, I can't claim to the ongoing experience of this, but they say that it is possible as a human being to live without suffering. It does not mean that you'll live without pain.
Yeah. Well, certainly someone who's accepted the possibility that they're dying doesn't mean that they're not experiencing enormous pain.
Well, they can, or sometimes not.
Right. Well, I'm getting feeling a little irritated and angry right now.
Okay.
I mean, I'm telling you from my own fucking personal experience that dying can really fucking suck. You know? And You can try to talk yourself out of it as much as you want, but you can't. You know, it doesn't stop the experience of the physical suffering. No. It doesn't mean that you're not at peace about the fact that you're dying, but I'm just, you know, I'm feeling like there's a little Pollyannaism going on about it right now, and it's bringing up some feelings for me.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's legitimate.
Thank you.
But, let me give you a very small example from my experience. I mean, trivial compared to what you've gone through. But nevertheless, I think it's to the point. All right. So, I think I can say that I'm a person who has spent quite a bit of time in my life suffering about feeling grief and sadness. Okay, so last year when I was moving away from my home and saying goodbye to my youngest daughter, I was leaving in the early morning accompanied by Sequoia's son, who very generously and gallantly offered to drive with me across the country. That's tough. So I went early in the morning into her bedroom to say goodbye to her. And we had a very tearful farewell. And I went out to the living room to go outside, and I was sobbing. And my soon-to-be ex-wife said, "Did you just go say goodbye to Vicky?" I said, "Yes," and she gave me a hug. And I walked out and I went into the truck, and I was just, you know, just smitten with grief. And she walked down onto the street in her pajamas.
My daughter.
In her pajamas. And I rolled down the window, and she gave me a hug, and she said, "Goodbye, Dad, I'm going to miss you." And I experienced the deepest grief that I'd ever felt in my life. And I drove away just sobbing, with tears running down my cheeks. But you know, I did not suffer with it. There was actually something indefinably sweet and even peaceful about that experience, that unfettered experience of grief. So I can say, again, small example compared to what you're talking about, but it's something I can point to from my experience, saying, you know, if you'd asked me probably any time previously in my life about an experience like that, I would talk about it as an experience of great suffering, but I didn't experience that. You could call it emotional pain, I suppose. But I wasn't suffering.